The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we kick off yet another week of programming right in the midst of a very busy time here at Edstone with PYC now into its second week. It's just a two-week camp on this side of the pond, so it's moving too fast. And as I told the campers this morning, we're going to have to make the most of these next 5 days or so to really pour our hearts into it. And to finish strong, we've had a really strong emphasis on culture, on being a cultured individual. I talked about it with the camp last week, as I think I alluded to once or twice here on the radio program. But we had a nice hour and 15 minutes to just go through the importance of being a cultured individual. And then added to that, last night we had a beautiful etiquette dinner. That's become a PYC tradition. And the kitchen staff here at Edstone really outdid themselves. The food has been tremendous all through the camp. But last night was a cut above. Derek Palmer, one of our local ministers here, was on hand to give all of us some instruction, some British culture instruction on good manners at the table and how to eat properly and so on. And of course, added to all of that, the lecture last week and just some of the music that we've been playing in the background here at PYC and the etiquette dinner last night. As you know, we also had the visit to Shakespeare's birthplace last Thursday. Just an amazing education in so many ways for these young people. And then tomorrow we head off to the British Museum. We're all boarding a big bus or coach, heading down the M40 early in the morning, and then spending the day in downtown London, most of it built around the stop or the visit there to the British Museum. We had quite a lot to say about that, I think about a year ago, just a little over a year, after a few of us and the students went down to see the museum. And then I think after that, we produced a radio program and I believe a TV program as well. I spoke about it to some of the brethren that attend services here in the UK. So it definitely was a meaningful visit last week, and last year, and our goal is to really make it meaningful for these young people coming from different nations, many different nations from all over the world. And we've got a lecture, by the way, for them at the end of today. Chris Eames will be taking care of that just to prep them for the visit to the museum to help them look for, well, the right artifacts. There's quite a few things in that museum that really aren't worth seeing. But the ones, it's kind of, as I said last year, it's kind of amazing just how there's so many important artifacts from a biblical standpoint, and in some of those cases, they're not even really spotlighted the way that they should be. So we're going to do our best to try to educate the youths and to prepare them to do a little research and study before they go in to the museum so that they can make the most of their visit. Well, coming up later in the program, we'll be covering some of the stats from this past weekend. The program that we played here in the UK on the CBS stations, Flame of Fire, will update you on the response totals for that particular show. And also we'll be peppering in a few emails. A few of you took my admonition on Friday to send in some comments over the weekend, and we'll be getting to those, or as I say, peppering those in as we go. Well, going back to Shakespeare's birthplace, and I know I touched on this a bit on Friday, but one thing that really stands out when you study, not just about Shakespeare himself and his upbringing and so on, but just about life in the late 1500s, he was born, as Bill Bryson wrote in his short book on Shakespeare, He was born into a world that was short of people and struggled to keep those that it had. I mean, it was a difficult time to even survive in England. The population at the time of Shakespeare's birth was 3 to 5 million people in this island that couldn't contain Shakespeare, as we covered on Friday. But when you think about it at the time, I mean, that's just, I mean, 3 to 5 million. And there's, what, 70 million, 75 million on this little island today. So just 3 to 5 million, lots of sickness and disease. Bryson points out in his book how that a couple of centuries before Shakespeare was born, the population in the UK was actually significantly more than 3 to 5 million. But people were dying off faster than they were being born because of sickness and disease and the plague. The year that Shakespeare was born, he lived in Stratford, or was born in Stratford, as you know, just down the road here by 5 miles or so. But there were 200 people in the city of Stratford that died of the plague. And there were only about 2,000 that lived in the city. And that was, at that time, I mean, that was a pretty big city, Stratford-upon-Avon. There were only 10 cities in the UK at Shakespeare's birth that had over 10,000 people. And so here in Stratford, there were about 2,000, so for the time, it was a pretty big city. And yet, in the year of Shakespeare's birth, 10% of the people, 10% of the births, 10% of the city died, many of them from sickness and disease. Even in Shakespeare's home, he had 4 sisters. Only one of them made it to adulthood. Only one of them. Bryson says in his book, in a sense, William Shakespeare's greatest achievement in life wasn't writing Hamlet or the sonnets, but just surviving his first year. Just surviving his first year. Life at that time was quite a struggle. I mean, you had to be tough to survive. And even Shakespeare, I mean, he lived, at that time, it would have been a very long life. But by today's standards, he lived to be just 52 years of age. How was it for him as a young man in Stratford, living in that difficult time, living when there was so much sickness going around in the city? There was a neighbor of the Shakespeares, a family there that had lost 4 children. And as I say, even the Shakespeares themselves, if you look at the sisters of young William, only one of them made it to adulthood. This quote here from Bryson's book is about what life would have been like for young William as a boy in school. It says here, boys normally attended school for 7 or 8 years, beginning at age 7. The school day was long and was characterized by extreme devotion to tedium. Pupils sat on hard wooden benches from 6 in the morning to 5 or 6 in the evening, with only 2 short pauses for refreshment, 6 days a week. And then the 7th day was reserved for religious instruction. So they were expected to learn a lot. Those that were privileged and able to even go to school. There was a fair bit of illiteracy at the time, too. But for those who attended school, I mean, it was rigorous. As I was saying to the campers over the weekend, this toughness that I talked to the boys about, the physical toughness that many of them need. Well, we also need it mentally and spiritually. We've got to be tough to really serve and obey God. It says here, for much of the year, they can hardly have seen daylight. These that were in school, that is, from 6 a.m. to 5, 6 p.m. at night. Discipline was probably strict. A standard part of a teacher's training was how to give a flogging. What a different time that would have been. How far removed are we from that kind of education? You can see why a young man who applied himself to his studies could become such a brilliant playwright and poet and scholar and historian. This is the example, one of them, that my father encouraged us to look at an orientation lecture that he gave 2 years ago. Shakespeare was a deep thinker, and there's a reason he was. He really applied himself. He was tough mentally. He really was. He was a perfectionist. He lived in an era when Well, the British Empire was just about to rise. It was just about to come on the scene. And God no doubt used William Shakespeare to enhance the education and the vocabulary of the British people. There's a lot we can learn from his writings. And just from, as I said last week, when you look at the commission that God's given to this church to get a message out there, to proclaim a message to this world, and how that we can't be confined to one little space, to one little island. I don't think I gave this quote to you on Friday, but this is from a book by Herman Sensheimer. He says, by so doing, he gains space and time for the British nation. The fact that, except for that, this is about his writings, except for the Merry Wives of Windsor, he did not set any contemporary plays on English soil, finds its ultimate explanation in the mission of a national poet to enrich from outside sources, from every corner of space and time, a nation that is struggling into her proper uninsular shape, meaning it was about to become this empire. It was about to take form. It says, between the lines and between the characters, one may read the legend, our island is too small, our kingdom is the world. Shakespeare's kingdom was the world, and you can see it in the plays that he wrote. Now, the reason, as I said Friday, that it's so important for us in multiple ways, besides, you know, education and getting the message out with clarity and conviction, and as I said on Friday, but I mean, the British Empire also was a foretaste of what's soon coming on this earth. Well, let me switch now to one email that came in. This one comes to us from Alaska, a regular listener up there, who listens not only to this program, but several others on KPCG via SoundCloud. And he writes here, I honestly have to say that this radio station, as well as many other things that the PCG gives to the public freely, has greatly altered my life for the better, especially since God has blessed this work with the new radio tower to reach people all around the world 24/7. My life never truly has been the same. And I'm sure many others can say the same. We must definitely be in the last hour if God wants this message delivered every day over the airwaves. It says here, thanks for yet another week of awesome programming. Each message behind every broadcast is very inspiring and uplifting. I do like hearing about our very history as the physical descendants of Israel and how God blessed our peoples abundantly. And as you brought out in Friday's program, God did use William Shakespeare to prepare Israel for greatness and bring the Holy Scriptures along with them. It's just amazing to see all the prophecies come to pass, just as God said it would. The things that God's church speaks of makes perfect sense. It's all fitting together like a puzzle into one beautiful picture. God did use William Shakespeare, for sure, and he was an educated young man. As I was saying to the campers here recently, tough mentally for sure, growing up in a difficult time period, and he endured. He overcame, no doubt, all kinds of obstacles. I mean, just the logistics of leaving Stratford and heading down to London. It's a 4-day walk or so. I mean, the pace of transit, just the pace of everyday, just what they had to put into living each day. And yet still, to be able to produce as much as he did, well, at the same time, I mean, that was a lifestyle that was free of many of the distractions, too, that you see in today's lifestyle. So there's lots, for sure, that we can take away from that life and the times of William Shakespeare. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG. Don't forget to send us more emails. As the week progresses, you can send them to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is there a more urgent expression in the Bible than the last hour? When he wrote his epistles, the Apostle John thought it was the last hour before Christ's second coming. In fact, it was only a type of our time today. Every detail of what John prophesied is now being fulfilled. Request the last hour. Never before has proper time management been more important, and this book will give you the urgency you need to organize your life God's way. Request the last hour. As part of this free offer, request The 7 Laws of Success by Herbert W. Armstrong, one of his most popular books ever. If you want to be a successful life organizer, then you need to read The 7 Laws of Success by Herbert W. Armstrong. Again, both books are completely free, so contact us now and get the help you need to organize your life God's way. The Trumpet Daily.
One more email that we received here from someone who's on the road quite a lot with his responsibilities, with his job. He says here, thank you all who are involved in the TD as well as all that, the KPCG station produces each week. It's been a great blessing to have such a dramatic increase in current news and messages from God's work. As a truck driver, I spend several hours each day on the road that provides time to listen to KPCG throughout the day. The archive programs are also very valuable. You have to train yourself to listen better when driving, but it is very rewarding. I usually download the programs onto a thumb drive so as to avoid using up all those precious data minutes on my phone. So the programs may be a day old still, but what a blessing to fill my mind each day in this way. It says here regarding your comments in a recent program concerning the low numbers for the recently aired TV show, Watch and Pray. Be encouraged, as I know there are others like me that found that particular message extremely important and even vital to everything this work is doing. I've listened to that program 4 times and we'll continue to keep it available on that thumb drive. So this is an individual who's really enjoyed that particular show, the recent one, Watch and Pray, from a couple weeks ago. It says, thanks again, and we'll continue to pray for the TD and all the KPCG programs. And then finally, P.S., I find it no coincidence that the prophetic event of Brexit was fulfilled as the work in Ephraim has increased so much. And so it is. The pace of prophetic events and the overall response that we're getting now to this particular branch of the work or regional office, together with the campus, another sister campus, I guess we could say, of the campus in Edmond, Armstrong College. The work certainly has in this past year and a half, these past 18, 19 months, it certainly has grown. Well, moving on from Watch and Pray, the program from a week and a half ago, this past weekend we played The Flame of Fire. That was a show that took us through a good chunk of Revelation chapter 1. If you haven't seen it yet, it's posted at thetrumpet.com. It advertised the true history of God's true church and who or what is the prophetic beast, and it brought in 140 requests for those two booklets. And so it was a nice bounce back from the relatively low numbers that we had the week before with Watch and Pray. 140 requesting the true history of God's true church and who or what is the prophetic beast. Responding to that program, The Flame of Fire. You look at the way that Jesus Christ is described in Revelation chapter 1. And well, I was just going through the early part of the God Family Vision book recently, and there's a lot in there about the flame of God or the light of God, specifically in reference to the first chapter of the Gospel of John, where it says that John came to bear witness of the light, capital L, that all men through him might believe. I mean, John's purpose, John the Baptist, His purpose was to be a witness. And God's people today serve that same purpose. To be a witness to God. To be a witness for Jesus Christ. Now, people in this world, I mean, the way they view that term, witness, is very different than the way it's discussed or described in the Bible. Very different. My father brings this out in the God Family Vision. He says that that witness can be more powerful than preaching. What does he mean by that? The witness can be more powerful than preaching because it's a person letting Christ live in them and thereby letting the light shine. That's the kind of witness John was, that all men through him might believe. That's quoting from John 1. My father says, although some don't want to believe it yet, in time our witness will have more of an effect on people. That's the strongest message of all. He says here, finally, the word witness is grossly misunderstood in religion today. What it truly means is to have the Logos live within you, to have the mind of Jesus Christ, the Word, in you, so that this light shines. See, in the world today, they view the word witness. Well, what do people in the traditional Christian faith typically do? Those who consider themselves to be a witness, well, they might go out to a street corner or get up on a soapbox. When in fact, to witness for God means to be filled with Christ. It means that Jesus Christ lives in you. It means that you're setting a right example. It means that the light of God shines forth from your life, from your marriage, from your family. And that's happening. It's a little flock, to be sure. But that's happening. You see it. You see it on this campus right now. There's a lot of light, spiritually speaking. It's shining forth. Someone else wrote in an email here from the Northeast U.S. It says, after Friday's program, I wanted to take you up on the challenge and give you a write-in to let you know how my husband and I have been able to listen to the TDR. We access the show via the KPCG website or on our iPhones, click on the show tabs at the top, and then listen to the latest program. We listen just about every day, especially on Friday evenings over dinner, to welcome in the Sabbath. She says here, it's been about 13 years since I graduated from AC, yet listening to the Trumpet Daily takes me right back to Armstrong College again, and it gives my husband a chance to experience some of the education that I received when I was a student at AC. It's a blessing. It's a blessing to have programs like the Trumpet Daily to help us continue with this priceless education God is making available for His whole church and anyone else wanting to listen. What an education. I mean, you talk about a focus at PYC. I mean, that's always there as well. High culture, as I said earlier, but true education as well. What is a godly education? Well, you get it here at PYC. A small sampling of it. It continues right through our academy program, right through our Herbert Armstrong College program. Notice this one here. This is from South Texas. He writes, thank you for this impelling assignment. Before discovering the Key of David and thetrumpet.com, nothing ever propelled me to read, let alone prompt enthusiasm to participate in an assignment. Now, with my eyes seeing more clearly, I can look back at my thoughts before and they appear woefully deficient. The inspiring information and understanding that flows out of the PCG has been galvanizing for both me and my wife. One particular love of mine is reading the articles before listening to discussions on Trumpet Hour. It's evident in how each KPCG voice brings their own sagacious attributes. Nice word there, sagacious. Their own sagacious attributes to the programs. It's also been nice to listen in as you share little snippets here and there of your personal lives and families. And he says here, what better way for us to educate ourselves than to absorb from the very people who follow the biblical standard of education? See, what better way to be educated the right way than to listen in to the instructions coming from others whose lights are shining, the light of God in them, the light of Jesus Christ, capital L, witnessing for God. We've received so much in God's church. We have such a rich history. You think about what Herbert Armstrong went through back in the 1920s, how God humbled him. He was on his way to riches and prosperity in the physical sense. And then the crash of the 1920s happened, and he lost everything. And making matters worse, his wife started to keep the Sabbath. She became a religious fanatic, the way he viewed it. This was the worst news he could have ever heard, he said in his autobiography. She challenged him. She challenged him to look into the Bible and to see where she was wrong, if she was wrong. And then he got another challenge coming from an individual that said, well, basically told him he was ignorant. And so in 1926, he was crushed in spirit, as he wrote in his autobiography. The business failure, humiliated by wifely religious fanaticism, as he wrote. And then finally, he entered into an in-depth study of the Bible. And what came from that study? Well, first of all, think about the toughness. You think about the education of young William Shakespeare. That takes us back to the 1500s. Mr. Armstrong, of course, we don't have to go back near as far. But look at his approach there in the fall of 1926. That six-month intense, near night-and-day study. Rising early in the morning to study. There at the Portland Library when the doors opened at 9. All the way through, staying there all the way through till closing time. And then continuing his studies back home. Past midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And he proved God's existence. And he actually proved that the Sabbath is the day that's commanded in the Bible. He proved his wife true. But there's more. As he said, I had now studied far enough to know that I must live by it. You see, he studied far enough to know that he had to be a witness. A witness in the biblical sense. He had to live by this. He had to let the mind of Jesus Christ in. And he knew he was going to be judged by it as well. Judged according to the Bible. And so God brought him down, just crushed his vanity. And he went through a humiliating experience. And he could have run away from the responsibility or from the challenge. But he didn't. He faced it. He was tough mentally. He was tough spiritually. What an education he received as a result. He turned around. He did a 180-degree turnaround and started living the way of the Bible. He started witnessing for God. He started consuming God's truth. He started living by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, from a vanity standpoint, from a stubborn standpoint, from a human nature standpoint, it was a bitter pill to swallow, to give in and to surrender to God. But he said that that pill also was the only medicine that really brought about real healing. And he started to find joy, joy beyond words to describe, in this newfound relationship with God. Studying God's word, hearing God's instruction, discovering new truth. All while surrendering to God in repentance and talking to God in prayers, fellowshipping with God, building a friendship with God. He wrote, when I studied the Bible, God was talking to me, and now I love to listen. I began to pray and knew that in prayer I was talking with God. I was not yet very well acquainted with God, but one gets to be better acquainted with another by constant contact and continuous conversation. See, what a difference. Either of these two eras, I mean, even Shakespeare, as I said on Friday, he wasn't a converted member of God's true church, But he studied the Bible, and you can see in all of his writings, you can see biblical principles and truths. And what a difference. I mean, today the Bible's ridiculed and mocked. God is mocked. Nobody believes or certainly studies the Bible. There might be a shallow existence in God and his existence, but that's it. Who studies the Bible? Who spends 6 months night and day to prove whether or not the Sabbath is God's truth, to prove God's existence? Well, if we're interested in being educated in God's truth and in God's character, it's going to take a little bit of mental toughness, some drive, some discipline. We're going to have to apply the laws of success as covered in Mr. Armstrong's booklet by that name, Seven Laws of Success. Education, drive, resourcefulness, perseverance, contact with God, setting the right goal, all these laws. Good health, of course. It takes all of them. That's what it takes to build up a royal family. That's the theme we've established at this year's camp. Building a family throne. God's family is truly educated in the truth of God. Look at the opportunities he's giving to some of our young people. Quite a few of the campers here coming from the States and Canada and Australia, coming from the Netherlands, coming from South Africa, coming from right here in the UK. Travel itself is an education. And then, as I told them over the weekend, I mean, all these lectures that God's given to them through his servants, through the ministry, the experiences that they have, learning about the British Museum tonight and then actually going down there to see it tomorrow, all the contacts that they're making here, the new friends, the fellowship. And then, as we've really encouraged them to do, the reading and the study, the research. Mr. Armstrong did it. Obviously, Shakespeare did. And when we come back, we'll look at another example of someone who really did study, who really was truly educated in a way unlike anything that you see today in our modern world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Send us those emails. Keep them coming in. TD@kpcg.fm. We really appreciate hearing from all of you. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Why, in a world of awesome progress and advancement, do we see so much disappointment, suffering, and misery? It has to do with the spiritual void in man. God made the human mind to need another spirit, God's spirit. Without it, man is incomplete. He is unable to solve the problems of this world. To learn more about this spiritual void, request these two free booklets, Repentance Toward God and The Seven Laws of Success. As it says in Acts 5, God gives his Holy Spirit to them that obey him. To obey God is to turn to him in repentance and faith. People trying to live without the power of God's Spirit in their lives are missing the most practical and valuable asset they could have. In the language of our day, it pays off. Both booklets are offered free of charge. There is no cost or obligation. And if you have not yet enrolled in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, make sure you sign up today. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will carefully lead you through a comprehensive study of God's inspired Word. Enroll today.
Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Throughout this camp, we've been really stressing this Psalm, Psalm 45, to the young people. We've referred to it or quoted from it at many camps in the past as well. But this one in particular, this verse, verse 16 of Psalm 45, where it says, instead of your fathers shall be your children. It's talking about a remarkable couple, a royal couple. And God saying their focus will be on the children, on the offspring, whom you make may make princes in all the earth. You may make them this. If you really concentrate and focus on their education, on training them. And that's what we as parents and we in the ministry are here to do. We're raising royal youth, princes and princesses. And we've got to keep our young people grounded in the Key of David vision, grounded in the God family vision, and help them see that they're the leaders of tomorrow. What an exalted calling we have, including our children. So many of them stepping foot into the wonderful world tomorrow as the leaders, as princes and princesses. It's not just a matter of giving them some book knowledge. It's teaching them how to lead. It's teaching them how to witness. How to let the light of God shine in their lives. That's going to take a lot of true education. All of those elements I listed off there before the break. The travel, the lectures, the thinking about what you see and hear, the experiences, the contacts, and of course the book learning. And then getting out there and putting it into practice. True education. And that's what will qualify us for these exalted positions of leadership in God's family. This one sort of, this quote here that I'll play for you in a second, it popped out at me at the time, and there was just nothing really to put it together with. This is going back to the Democrat convention in Philadelphia a few weeks ago. I forget now, a couple weeks, I guess. But this was from the lecture that President Obama gave, or the 15-minute presentation he gave. I think it was that. Maybe it was longer. But there was one point in his speech where he talked about how educated and how prepared and how qualified Hillary Clinton is for the office of president. Here's what Barack Obama had to say.
There has never been a man or a woman, not me, not Bill, nobody more qualified than Hillary Clinton to serve as president of the United States of America.
Never. Never has there been someone more qualified to serve as president of the United States. And here again, just compare the eras, compare today. I mean, he's talking about anyone that's been there from the 40-some presidents, going back to Washington and Adams, going back to Jefferson and Madison, Lincoln, Reagan. There's never been a man or a woman more qualified than Hillary Clinton. And you, of course, some of you know all too well the many problems that this particular candidate has had. The problems with honesty, the problems with deceit. And yet in the view of this individual that currently has that office, no one is more qualified. Well, I'll leave it to you to go back and determine whether or not George Washington or Abraham Lincoln were more qualified. But I'll just put forward another example here. A lesser known president, a president known for, well, maybe having a somewhat of an uneventful presidency. He's John Adams' son, John Quincy Adams. And if you look back at his training and the way that his parents taught him, In many ways, John Quincy Adams is one of the more remarkable leaders that this country, the United States, has ever produced. He may not have had the most eventful presidency in history, but he certainly was a qualified he is someone that qualified for that high office. That's for sure. David McCullough, the historian, he wrote in his book on John Adams, about Little John's upbringing. And for much of his upbringing, when he was, you know, from 3 to 10 years of age, he was just basically there with his mother and his siblings, because John Adams was off in Philadelphia trying to establish a new nation with the help of others. And then at the time John Quincy was 10 and 11 years of age, then John Adams was called upon to serve as a diplomat for the United States, a diplomat or an ambassador internationally in France. And so when he was told that we needed you in France, well, for a time there, Abigail Adams was debating whether or not she should go. But in the end, she decided, well, it probably would be too dangerous. I mean, we're engaged in a war right now with Britain. We could well be taking fire from a ship in the Atlantic, just on the ride over. So she opted not to go, and she didn't want her 10-year-old son to go with his father either. But Little John really wanted to go. He desperately wanted to go. And so finally, Abigail thought, well, maybe it's for the best. He could spend time with his father and so on. And she wrote to him later, after his departure, "You're in possession of a natural good understanding and of spirits unbroken by adversity and untamed with care. Improve your understanding for acquiring useful knowledge and virtue, such as will render you an ornament to society, an honor to your country, and a blessing to your parents. And remember, John," she's writing this to a 10-year-old, "you are accountable to your maker for all your words and actions." Morality, religion and morality, that was seen as the foundation of John Quincy's education. Well, on that trip, it was a short trip. And in the words of David McCullough, it was a horrendous voyage. Everything that could have gone wrong on that trip across the Atlantic went wrong. And months later, when John Quincy returned with his father, he said, "I never want to take a trip like that again." But it wasn't long after that. John Quincy now is 11 years of age, and his father is charged with the task of heading over to Europe again as a diplomat for the United States. John Quincy didn't want to go, except this time his mother said, "No, you're going. You're going. You're going with your father. It's important for your education." And as it happens, he went with his dad, and he was over there in France for the most part for 7 years. And so half of his upbringing was with his mother, a devout Christian. Half of his upbringing was with his father, also devout in his religious worship. Abigail wrote to Little John this time, during this second trip, "These are the times." Notice this again. This is a mother writing to an 11-year-old. "These are the times in which genius would wish to live. It's not in the still calm of life or the repose of a Pacific station that great characters are formed," she said. "The habits of a vigorous mind are formed in contending with difficulties. If you're going to be prepared and ready to lead as a young man, you've got to learn to contend with difficulties." It says, "Great necessities call out great virtues. When a mind is raised and animated by scenes that engage the heart, then those qualities which would otherwise lay dormant wake into life and form the character of the hero and the statesman." I mean, they really had it in their minds, John and Abigail, to raise a statesman, to raise a leader. And it was a dangerous time. It was a difficult time. He grew up as the son of they were in the midst of a revolution. And the family members, the parents, were making tremendous sacrifices for their country. He had to have the heart, though. He had to have the strength. He had to be strong. He had to face adversity. On that particular voyage, they did take fire from the British. You talk about a terrifying experience for an 11-year-old boy. He didn't want to go. His mother said, no, you're going back. And as David McCullough says here, of course he went, and the history of our country is different because of it. Notice this. Again, he's not viewed as the greatest president ever, but how qualified was he for that high office? McCullough says, John Quincy Adams, in my view, was the most superbly educated and maybe the most brilliant human being who ever occupied the executive office. He was, in my view, the greatest Secretary of State we've ever had. He wrote the Monroe Doctrine. He wrote the Monroe Doctrine, among other things. And he was a wonderful human being and a great writer, told to keep a diary by his father when he was in Europe. He kept the diary for 65 years. And those diaries are unbelievable. They're essays on all kinds of important, heavy subjects. He never tells you who he had lunch with or what the weather's like. But if you want to know that, there's another sort of little cliff diary that he kept about such things. Two diaries, one for the miscellaneous and one full of essays. Well, McCullough and John Adams, the biography, he spends a fair bit of time talking about the rigorous education of that young boy when in France with his father, was there mixing it up with Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, able to hold his own. You think of Jesus Christ, what it says there in Luke 2 about the 12-year-old. Mixing it up with the physicians, the lawyers of his day, 12 years old. McCullough says at 17, the boy was extraordinarily accomplished. In his 7 years away from home and from conventional schooling, he had benefited immeasurably from his father's interest and encouragement. His travels, his reading, the time spent in the company of men like Francis Dana and Thomas Jefferson had given him a maturity, made him conversant on the breadth of subjects that people found astonishing. He had already seen more of Europe and Russia than any American of his generation. His French was virtually perfect. He was broadly read in English and Roman history. If you were to examine him in English and French poetry, I know not where you would find anybody his superior, wrote Adams proudly to the boy's tutor, former tutor, and guardian at Leyden, Dr. Benjamin Waterhouse. Here is someone that was perhaps more qualified for the office of presidency than anyone in the history of the United States. What an upbringing. The tutors, the training, the passion, the desire. The mental toughness, the voracious appetite for knowledge and learning. There's a passage in Galatians 4 that talks about the heir. The heir, as long as he's a child, he defers nothing from the servant. I mean, they're kind of at the same level, the servant or the governor or the tutor. Until he's appointed of the Father. In other words, God is calling the lowly of this world, and educating them and training them for offices as kings and priests. When at the appointment of God the Father, they're going to be given jurisdiction over all things, as the Bible says. It certainly does show just how important education and training is. You look at that passage in Galatians 4. I mean, there's an example right there of a child supervised, educated, trained, taught by the governors, by the tutors, by the teachers. And then when they're old enough, they're prepared. They've qualified. They're ready. Think about what it says in Revelation 19 about the bride of Christ. When that marriage comes, she is ready. She is ready to help and assist Jesus Christ. She is ready to bring billions of children into the God family. She's been prepared. She's been thoroughly trained for that high calling. In the book John Quincy Adams by James Traub, I guess is how you say his last name, He writes, regarding John Quincy, the essential components of John Quincy Adams' early education were a passion for knowledge and intellectual accomplishment, an abiding Christian faith, and an extraordinary awareness of the dramatic moment in history in which he was living. Those three essential components, the passion for knowledge and intellectual accomplishment, the abiding Christian faith, and the extraordinary awareness of the dramatic moment in history in which we are living. And that's what we've got to bring to our education. We've got to bring that kind of a mindset. Think of the dramatic moment in history that we're living through right now. Are you aware? Do you have an extraordinary awareness of this moment in which we're living? And together with it, a passion for knowledge and intellectual accomplishment, and this deep and abiding love for God's truth, for the Christian faith. In that same book, Traub writes, John Quincy Adams understood as a very young boy that his life belonged not merely to himself, but to his country and its cause. He would never forget that a life properly lived required commitment to principle, to sacrifice, and suffering. This is someone who was eminently qualified to serve as president. Certainly much, much, much more so than any of the current candidates we have running for office in the United States. Some amazing history for sure. Whether you look at John Quincy Adams or the history with Mr. Armstrong there, God bringing him to conversion back in the 1920s. Or the different time period that was Shakespeare's day back in the late 1500s. There's lots and lots that we can take away from this history. Yes, education. Education, it comes from a lot of things for sure. Travel and lectures and thinking about what you see and hear, who you meet, the experiences you have, the contacts you make. And finally, education also comes from much reading and study. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on the first show of this week. Send us those emails, would you? td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.